Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, he's bringing that swagoo juice. He is Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
You were in my dream last night, Stephen.
Oh, God, Stephen. That cannot be good.
You and your wife were both in my dream last night.
Wow, okay.
It was weird.
Okay.
We were all in Japan on some sort of vacation.
Okay.
And someone was trying to rob our stuff.
Okay.
And then Lane beat the shit out of this guy.
Yes, that would probably be what.
And that's how the dream ended.
Okay, well, that went right. A lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Right.
And with us this week, we have Joel Walsh, the lead game designer at Mediatonic Games, of course, creating Fall Guys Ultimate Knockout. Hey, how you doing, Joe? What's going on, man?
Doing pretty good. It's raining here in England as usual.
Oh, it's raining here too.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. And then, yeah. Just spent the whole day working on Fall Guys. Just had a playtest, which went well. So, yeah, doing
awesome.
Good.
Awesome. Yeah, we checked out Fall Guys, had a great time. I, of course, had the epic fail at the end, just missing the crown. I would have been the victor. I would have been the winner. But, of course, I go home empty-handed because that's just how it is. So how have things been going since PAX? Obviously, the world has completely changed. But how has development gone? How has reception been? What's it been like since PAX?
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy since PAX. Like, obviously, we're all working remotely now here in London. But it hasn't really slowed down the pace of development too much. Like, in some ways, it's been quite helpful. Like, we're used to playing the game in the studio with everybody surrounding you. And that's great, and that's really fun. But that's not necessarily indicative of what the game's going to be like when the game goes live. Like, most people are going to be playing on their own. So it's meant that we've had a much more, like, realistic feel of like what it feels like to play Fall Guys. So that's been really helpful, and we're still charging forwards towards release, and we're really getting stuck into like the closed beta now since PAX East happened. We're doing like almost weekly playtests now with our closed beta participants, which we grab through Discord and stuff, and it's been really good to get some, you know, unfiltered feedback from people, and get stuck and start fixing stuff, start tweaking stuff based on what they've said. So yeah, it's been busy, and the end's in sight, which is really exciting. But we've got a fair amount to go still.
Awesome. Awesome. Speaking of unfiltered, that's what this is, folks. This is the Dual Screens Podcast. This is an unfiltered interview show where we bring on industry guests to discuss their latest project and their story, be it a programmer, a game designer, a director, an artist, a pixel artist, a musician, a voice actor. Doesn't matter. They all have a story to tell, and this is their podcast to do it. This podcast posts each and every Thursday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home Podbean, and we're also on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple, Google Play, really anywhere, and including our YouTube channel, youtube.com/dualscreenstv. Folks, I do want to say right off the bat, I do have my window open because it is muggy. So if you do hear some cars going by, some people, I apologize. But you know what? It's the summer and it's hot, and I'm not going to apologize anymore for it. But anyway, let's get back to the show. So why don't you tell our audience, just to kind of set everybody's mind in the right direction, what is Fall Guys?
Cool, yeah. So Fall Guys is basically the greatest online game show anyone has ever seen. So it's 60 squishy, collapsible jelly bean characters all lined up on a start line. And they are put through round after round of like knockout style gameplay. So if you've seen Takeshi's Castle, MXC, Total Wipeout, those types of shows, that's really what we're trying to emulate with Fall Guys. And just like the format of those shows, we go from lots of Fall Guys on the start line to one winner at the end. So it's kind of Battle Royale DNA as well, Mario Party DNA, all of that combined. And it's all about, you know, crazy slapstick hits, just like total chaos that you've never seen before. And real like heart racing competitive gameplay as you reach those final rounds.
Yeah, it's an absolute blast. Andy and I, like I said at the top of the show, Andy and I played it at PAX East. It actually won one of our awards, didn't it, Andy?
It did.
It was a blast. We had such a good time. I think the best thing about that you have going for it right now, aside from like the tone and the overall zaniness, is how quick the matches can be and how absolutely furious the action can be. There was one game specifically, I think it was you had to chase around and end the match with a tail on or something like that, if I remember correctly. I think it was a tail.
Yeah, that's what I lost.
That was insanity. It was just probably two dozen people just chasing each other around, knocking each other around, trying to avoid each other. It's basically tag. But only half the people have the item, and the other half, I think, were trying to get the item. So it was just, it was a blast, and there's There's a lot of frantic action like that. What other kind of games do you have that can people look forward to?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a huge variety. I think we're looking to launch with around 25 different games at the moment. And I think we only showed off 4 at PAX East. We've had a couple of new ones come in recently, which are really good. Like one of the ones we've been playing a lot is called Slime Climb. So Slime Climb is kind of like this giant spiraling obstacle course going up a mountain. And the entire arena is being filled with slime from the bottom up. So you're not actually trying to like necessarily race other people. You've just got to reach the end before the slime does. And we've made it. It's really difficult right now. Like I think about 20% of people at best get to the top. Like it is like devilishly hard. But I think that's been one of my favorites is like, it's been one of the first time in Fall Guys where we're seeing people figure out shortcuts and speed runs. Like people are jumping off like bouncy pillars, which would like meant to be totally like ornamental, and they're like shaving half seconds off their time to get the advantage.
Wow.
So keep your eyes peeled for that one when it comes out. I think that's probably my personal favorite at the moment.
What is that like for you guys to design an actual mini game for Fall Guys? What's that look like on your end? How do you conceive these just amazing experiences?
So at least personally for me, I do stop by watching a lot of game shows or playing other mini games, but mostly like sitting down and watching Takeshi's Castle or something and finding something within one of those rounds that I feel might have a spark in it for something that we could do. Like, and we have a list of pillars that we try and hit with each round. Like it's quite high concept, but you know, we want the rounds to be competitive, but they should have a sprinkling of chaos in. They should have, you know, the opportunity for once in a million moments where you want to clip something and post it on Twitch or something like that. You know, we want them to be really easily understandable. Like if you can't explain them in 3 words, that's it. It's too complicated for Fall Guys. And so that kind of gives us a really good starting point to bring to the table as a design team, like a bunch of different ideas. And we'll do a bit of a sit down session where everyone will bring a few and we'll talk them through. And then about half of them, I'd say, we're just like, that's a rubbish idea. Let's just kill that right now. And then the other half will go through kind of like a block out stage. So we'll block it out and run around and maybe spend a little bit of time prototyping and then try and be very critical very quickly as to whether or not something's got a spark in it that's like, oh yeah, this feels as good as one of the ones we showed at PAX, for example. And that process is one of the hardest things, is figuring out the difference between this isn't fun but it could be if we just spent a couple more days on it and this isn't fun and it never will be no matter how much time we spend on it. Like That process is really difficult, really challenging. But once we're all agreed that something is good and it's resonating, that process then is just like tweak it, play it with lots of people until eventually we kind of pass it off to the art team and they make it look all nice.
So if the end is 25, if 25 is your goal for launch, how many do you think you started with to get it down to those 25?
Oh, God. I think in total, our hit rate's been pretty good. Like we've not had to kill many things that made it to a prototyping stage. Maybe like under 10, I would say, have been built. We've looked at and thought, you know what, this just isn't working. Most of them get cut much quicker than that. We did one near the beginning that was like a giant minesweeper level. So you had, I don't know why I thought this was a good idea, but you had like mines hidden in the floor.
Sure.
And you all ran and you had like mine detectors on your head that started beeping. And the idea in my head was that everyone will like tiptoe forwards and like we'll all navigate this thing together. And it was everyone just ran forward and exploded and it was total chaos. And also like making 4 guys run across a minefield is like horrible. Like I don't know why I ever thought tonally that would work. But that's probably the one where I was
it
like,
it sounds
like,
horrible, but I think you should seize on this and have the losers compete in the discarded mini games.
Or yeah, instead like, of mines, yeah, you do spring-loaded floor tiles.
Yeah, so that's a much better idea. That's a much better idea. I distinctly remember saying, if this one doesn't work, then I've got no idea what will, because this is a slam dunk. And then we played it like twice and was like, oh, that was a waste of everybody's time. But that's kind of the fun of it. Like you've got to go through that process to kind of hone down what works and what doesn't, stuff like that.
That's when they learned what colors the Fall Guys bleed.
Yeah. That was pretty insane.
Mind dash.
Yeah. You won't be seeing that one anytime soon.
I do love the design of the character, though, that jelly bean-like character, how it embodies all of us in a way. We're all just squishy jelly people on the inside, I feel.
I think that's what we really wanted, is to design a character that feels useless. Like, everybody's used to playing Mario and he never trips up. Every roll is perfect. Every landing, he sticks the landing, you know. Like,
Right.
we wanted to make a
He's
character
the
that
world's
spends
most
most of their
graceful
time.
plumber.
Exactly. It's like, where did he learn all these insane skills?
Woohoo!
And we wanted to like make a character that is trying to be Mario. They think they're Mario, but it never quite works out as well as I think it's going to.
And that's very much in the spirit of those like Maximum Elimination Challenge shows where they come dressed as like superheroes and they're like, yeah, and they do all the, I don't know what they're really saying, but they come in there really gung ho, like really ready to do this, and then they just fall flat on their face. And it's absolutely hilarious. Those shows were like eye-opening for me of how hilarious some just people getting hurt it really is. Like America's Funniest Home Videos gave us a tease of how funny it was when somebody gets punched in the nuts, but Maximum Elimination Challenge took it to 11 and showed us how funny it would be if they punched themselves in the nuts and really just raised that bar.
I think it is part of it because it's also self-inflicted. Like, they turned up to do this. No one asked them. No one's probably even paying them. It's just like sheer enthusiasm. And that was kind of what we wanted to. Like, Fall Guys are enthusiastic till the end. They always get back up. They always keep running towards the finish line. They're full of enthusiasm.
Well, speaking of enthusiasm, PAX East, I mean, people were just having a blast at your booth, and it was a massive booth. You guys did a great job over at PAX. I imagine that, you know, obviously things changed. You probably wanted to get this in front of more crowds in a similar vein, and now aren't able to do that, at least for the foreseeable future. But let's rewind to PAX a little bit. What was that experience like for you? I imagine I don't think it was your first time showing a game in that, showing the game, I should say, in that grand scheme. But if it was, you know, please let us know about that. Because Andy and I only go to PAX East. That's the only one that we know. But what was that like for you? What was it like to have people just like sitting there gushing, lining up, and just having a blast and being completely goofy?
I mean it's crazy. I mean, we showed it. We did PAX Australia, and that was really good, but there were a lot less game. Like, PAX Australia was a lot smaller, and we kind of it went down really well there. But you know, when you go to PAX East, that's where the big dogs are. Like, it's
Crazy Americans.
you're really up against every big game that's being shown, and even after like having a lot of positive feedback, you open the doors for the first time and you wait for people to come in, and you stand there, and for the first 2 minutes, everybody walks by because Cyberpunk, you know, is opening, Animal Crossing is opening, and you that moment goes through your head of like, man, maybe the game just sucks. Like, maybe this is all pointless. Maybe people aren't interested. And then once you get a couple people like reeled into the booth, suddenly everyone else starts watching. Everyone else, it clicks, and then there were just lines to the end. And once the lines start, I think that's when you realize like, oh no, this is working. This is really fun. And then it's honestly like the most fun thing, going to those shows and showing games, because it ticks a lot of the boxes that we wanted the game to tick. Like, it's a great spectator sport. You have people hanging around watching, and
100%.
it's really accessible, and you get kids, families, you know, people who don't usually play games, all really enjoying it, as well as people who are hyper competitive. You know, they've got their mixer jackets on, they're here to play esport games, you know. Like, you get a real mix, and that was really fun as well. That was really pleasing to see.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Andy.
No, and you have that awesome like gold foam crown as a reward when you beat the actual game, so that's great incentive to get anyone to go on that line.
So I do want to ask a little bit about the actual game itself, like just you know, as a consumer and somebody who is looking forward to this. Are you able to have like online lobbies where you could have all of your friends on a friends list join so that you could all go into a same game, or are you worried about people like throwing games for people or, you know, cheating or something like that? Because the way I envision this is like, hey, I'm going to stream Fall Guys tonight. Anybody who wants to join our lobby, here's like whatever, or come friend me, add me. We'll all get in the game together. We'll all laugh. while also playing with, because obviously it's a lot of players, so you may not be able to fill all of those players. Can you go a little, speak a little bit about that, how that's going to work?
Yeah, so I think for launch, like, there's a couple of things. Like, firstly, you're right that we have to be really careful that if someone and 16 of their friends, they all go matchmake together, there's a lot of sway those people have in how this game could go. And we have to kind of prepare for the worst slightly, in that, like, those 16 people just go and barricade an entire area and ruin the experience for the other 44 people, right, who matchmade. So you'll be able to go in with, like, teams of four into matchmaking. You can play up with your friends, but only one of you will win at the end. So at some point, you're going to have to turn on your friends. But we are talking a lot, like today even, about how can we get streamers streaming the game with their fans in a way that doesn't risk the experience for other people, but also doesn't drive our server costs through the roof. So we're looking at the moment of ways we can do that, because I think Fall Guys just has huge potential for streaming. So the sooner we can find ways for streamers to play with their communities, the better, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's instantly what I started thinking about is, you know, I'm as a streamer, you know, we have a channel, twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. I have a channel. Don't worry, I'll plug it later. Wink, 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 wink. But yeah, like that's one of the things I think of, is just like sitting there watching a community play and laugh and just, you know, beat the hell out of each other, be really competitive. Is it possible to like, have you looked at maybe scaling the games back to be playable by, like, say 24 players, you know, or something like that? Like, was that something that you guys were mulling around, or is it just you're kind of sticking to the scale?
Yeah, I mean, so the way it works is that each round that we make is tailored to a certain amount of people. So when you play one of the giant gauntlet levels, they work best at between like 30 and 60 people. Okay. If you play Slime Climb, the one I mentioned earlier, that's like, it's really sings at about 10 to 20, because it's a bit more narrow. And so because each round is tailored to a certain amount of people, we have quite a lot of flexibility with where we start, because if you only have 30 people, we can start you at a 30 person round and you can just play through those rounds there. But we have to be a little bit careful, because obviously we have less rounds later on. So we need to make sure that there are still enough content. So there are some things we need
diversity in other words.
Yeah. Like chance for that. There are things we need to figure out, but it's not impossible. And I think there are definitely ways for us to solve it, but we are not a huge team, and at a certain point, we kind of need to like pick a set of features. Like, I remember there was like one of the guys from Bungie made this analogy that I thought was great. It was like, making a game is like being on a runway in a plane that is too heavy, and you have to throw things off the plane as you go. Otherwise, that plane is never going to take off and it's going to crash. And so it's a very good analogy, because it's what it feels like about when you're 6 months out from launch and you realize this plane is too heavy. You've got to start throwing things out the back. And unfortunately, some of the stuff around sort of custom game streaming and custom lobbies and stuff is one of those things where it's like, we'll come back around and pick this up later. But right now, we need to get this thing off the ground. It's definitely doable for sure. It's just a matter of manpower and time until we get it working.
And unfortunately for Bungie, Andy, they threw out almost everything when they launched Destiny 1 and 2.
Right.
That plane was completely empty.
I mean, the plane still took off.
The plane, oh boy, did the plane take off. Got plenty of people to, I guess, look at the plane. But boy. Go ahead, Andy. I know I was cutting you off.
That's okay. I want to ask, how did you guys end up... You just had to. So you're working with Devolver Digital on this game. They're the publisher. What was that conversation like between the both of you?
Yeah, so we've known Devolver for a while at Mediatonic. We did... they published a game called Foul Play way back in the day, which was an Xbox Live Arcade title they picked up, which is... that was kind of where like the relationship started. And then we also did the Hatoful Boyfriend HD remake. If you guys have played that, it's a pigeon dating simulator.
That is, Joe, every game night in my house when my friends come over, we always play that game.
Yeah, oh my god, that's cool.
Because we're deprived, sick individuals.
Yeah. So that was kind of, we built up this relationship with Devolver, and that kind of means that we talked about doing another game together, and we kind of said, like, if we come up with anything that we think you'd like, you've got first dibs. And so we basically, Devolver as well, they don't really like presentations. They don't really like PowerPoints. They don't really like reading. They just like you to pitch them stuff quickly and get them excited about stuff. And I think Fall Guys was very quick. We basically showed them a bunch of GIFs of Takeshi's Castle and MXC, and we're like, this, but a game. And they were like, sweet, let's make it. And like, I'm not joking, it wasn't really much more complicated than that to get Devolver on board. And they're a great publisher to work with because they have faith in their developers. They basically say, look, you guys make games. We publish games. We'll like champion you, but we're not going to come in here and tell you how the game needs to be made. We're not going to dictate what features need to be in or need to be out. Like, they have feedback on stuff occasionally, but they empower you as a developer to like make the right calls. And they're the best publisher I've ever worked with, for sure. Really, really good.
Can you give an example of like what kind of feedback they do give? Because we've heard this from multiple developers. We hear this all the time, how great they are. We want to get them on the show at some point and, you know, pick their brains as well. But like, what kind of feedback does a developer give about games?
Yeah, so a lot of the Devolver, I think, like when you look at their back catalog of games, they have a history of publishing games with really great game feel. And when you pick up Hotline Miami or Gungeon or any of the games they've released, they just feel really good. Everything's satisfying. Everything's got this clunk to it. And that's where you get feedback early on is, oh, you know, it'd be really great if when your character landed on the floor, it felt a bit more weighty, or the character feels a little bit too stiff. But it's all caveated with, hey, at the end of the day, it's your game and you guys can do what you want. But from playing it, we just feel like it might be better or work better in these ways. So that conversation, it's very casual. It's, you know, it's not huge lists or anything like that. It's like they come to the office, we all sit around a desk and we have a chat about maybe what we could tweak. So I mean, that's kind of the kind of conversations you have, but it's only a couple times really during development. They really do just let you get on with it.
Do you guys feel any pressure being a game under the Devolver umbrella? Because I feel like when you have that stamp, it's a certain pedigree of game you're going to get with Devolver.
Yeah, definitely. Like, especially when we're at PAX and you've got Gungeon next to you, and it's like, that's one of my favorite games. There's definitely a pressure to hit that quality bar, because Devolver make great games, and I think they pride themselves, like you said, on that like Devolver stamp of approval. So, and that's really what we're doing now is polishing the game and tweaking it, and really making sure that the whole product like sings and speaks to that Devolver brand.
So, what publisher? Well, maybe you don't want to tell what publishers, but like, how did things? What were things like before Devolver for you? Like, did you work for other companies? Were you still making, you know, games on your own? Like, what was your career before meeting up with Devolver Digital?
So I've worked in Mediatonic for quite a long time, about 8 years now. So historically, Mediatonic as a company, we work with big publishers or big IP holders to make games for their franchises. So we've done... we did a Harry Potter mobile game. We've done Gears Pop, which is a Gears of War mobile game. We do a whole bunch of different things, and we've essentially been like a work for hire mobile studio with a really, really good reputation for making really, really polished, slick mobile games. And we love making those games. We love working with Microsoft and Scopely and a bunch of other companies that we've worked with over the past. But there's always been this desire to make something for console. Again, we used to do what we used to do. I don't know if you guys ever played PlayStation Minis back in the day that came out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we have a history of making console games. And I think, at least personally, I've always had that desire to like get back to making it. But it's just been about finding the right idea. We've spent a good couple of years prototyping things, trying out a couple of different ideas before we settled on Fall Guys as something that we thought was worth taking forward. And it's from that point, it's been pretty quick. But it's taken us a long time to... not only find the right ideas, but also build up a skill set that gives a publisher like Devolver confidence, because just having a good idea is not enough. They need to have faith in you that you can actually deliver that. And that's been a big, big learning curve for the studio over the past 5-6 years.
What's it like to pitch a Microsoft for a massive IP like Gears of War?
It's really fun, actually. Especially when they're IPs that you are really passionate about. Like, I can't speak too much about the process and I haven't been involved with it a lot, but they basically come to people that they like and say, hey, we want to make a Gears mobile game. What have you got? and that conversation evolves, and they are really receptive to coming up with different ideas. So I mean, it's a great opportunity to work with IPs that I've been a big fan of or have had history with in the past.
It's awesome. Because, like, I mean, you mentioned two of probably the some of the, like, in video games, I would say Gears of War is probably a top 10, like, recognizable franchise if you're, especially an American gamer. But, and then you said Harry Potter. Like, I can't even think of a bigger IP,
yeah,
like, you know, top 10 IP in the globe. So I feel like that's pretty remarkable that you were able to just land those. So kudos to you guys. Congratulations. That's sure. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, I feel those would be, like, really guarded IPs, like, just treat them with care and don't, like, mess it up too much, like, of what you're doing exactly. Like, what is your vision here with our IP that you're doing? It's the game, but it's Pop Figures. Sold. Yeah. Love it. Go with it.
And that's a double license. Yeah. You also had to deal with the
true,
Pop
yeah.
stuff. And like, but they, God, Pop, I feel like, would give anybody. I feel like they would just be like, what do you do? What are you doing? What do you got? You drew a drawing in third grade? Let's make a Pop of it. Bring it. Bring
if it,
it
sells
here.
More of these Pop figures, we're all about it.
We got so if much could, vinyl yeah. over here, we don't know what to do with.
If we could do Fall Guys Pop figures, I'd be very happy.
Oh, absolutely. You know happen. That's going to happen. That's absolutely that going to happen.
Cool. Waiting for the call now.
I mean, you have the contact with Gears Pop. It's all there. It's all waiting
to You know what would be cool for Fall Guys? Would be, you know, remember those little, those bean... Like, they were, like, little monster bean things that they were weighted. So, like, if you rolled it, they would roll end over end. Do you remember those little toys? What were those called? They were, like, I think they still make them. They would be, like, little pill-shaped things. They would look like little beans. And you can, like, shake them up, and they would roll, and they'd battle, and, like, they would fly around and hop around. You can make a Fall Guys playset where you get these little beans and you roll them down a track and you could like race them to like go through. Mm-hmm. The possibilities are endless here. Okay. Fall Guys is going to be huge, huge, huge.
Yeah. It reminds me, you know, I can't remember who it was. Was it George Lucas who was like, just give me like 0.1% of the merch rights for Star Wars. Don't pay me. And now he's a billionaire.
Yeah.
Exactly. I've been tempted to do the same. Like, don't pay me Fall Guys. I just want the merch. Just give me the merch rights.
Could do a whole, you know, like a jelly
so
bean.
Much you could do.
Yeah,
a
yeah.
jelly bean thing
Absolutely.
With that. Yeah,
little squishy plushes that you could chuck at your yeah. brother and sister. I mean, the possibilities here, like honestly. So when you're, I want to get back to Fall Guys. When you're designing games, because one of the things that stood out to me was how you kept it very simple. You kept not just the game's concept of, you know, point A, point B, but you also kept the control screen scheme very, very simple. It's, I feel like it's something that really anybody could pick up and learn in a few minutes. Obviously, that was a conscious decision. Was it always that way? Was it something that you worked toward making it that way? Or did you say from the very beginning, hey, however many games we make, these are the buttons we're using. This is how simple it has to be. Figure it out from there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's basically from day one. One of our like main tenets of the game was that this game has to be something that anybody could enter because it has to fulfill the brief of being a game show. That's what makes game shows great, is that you get these horrifically unfit people standing on the start line thinking they got a chance to win. And we felt like it was important that Fall Guys followed that same ethos. But it has been hard. Like, there have been a couple of things. Like, firstly, you're totally right that one of the things we said right from the beginning is that the control scheme has to be consistent across all game modes. We can't suddenly add a glide button. We can't add a dodge roll for certain levels. The Fall Guy is the Fall Guy is the Fall Guy. And we have to find a balance between simplicity, but also depth, to the point where there's no point just making the character do nothing because we're going to run out of ideas for levels really, really quickly. So that was why it was important to have a grab in there, because that opens up a lot of different gameplay opportunities. The other big thing that was really hard was camera control. We went back and forth on that quite a lot, because I was vehement for a long time that we would have no camera control in Fall Guys, because you watch some people play dual analog games and they spend their whole time looking at the ceiling spinning around and they just can't get it. Like, my dad will never be able to play Halo because he can't do first person dual analog stuff. But we found during development, this was like, we were probably about a year into development, we found that like designing levels with no camera control is really hard if you want to do an arena, because you can't go behind anything, so you can't have big structures in the middle. So everything became this coliseum where everything had to be around the sides and the middle had to be kind of empty. And it was getting very, very difficult to design decent levels because we just kept hitting these restrictions. And so we ended up softening that accessibility pillar to be to have camera control, but no level should rely on camera. There should never be a level where if you don't move the camera, you won't know what to do and you might get eliminated. There's advantages to moving the camera for sure, but if you almost all of our levels, you can just play with the left stick and run around in it and it's fine. So I think we've got the balance about right. But we'll see. The proof's in the pudding, really, when it comes out.
Do you see yourselves adding additional content post release? I feel like this sort of game, like the design, it screams like adding additional games to the mix after it's been released.
Yeah, we're looking at that at the moment, really. Like, some of the team are starting to look a little bit at what comes after launch already. Basically, the designers aren't really allowed to touch the game anymore because we keep breaking stuff. So we've been told, just look at what's next. Don't break the game. So, well, me specifically. So yeah, we're looking at what does season, if Fall Guys launches with season one running, what does season two come with? Is there anything we could add content wise to the game to keep things interesting, to keep things being new? I think lots of people have really cool ideas about different level ideas already. We've got a bit of a backlog, so we're figuring out how we can add that stuff as we go.
So I have go ahead, Andy.
No, so you'd like a community, like a contest, like design a mini game for Fall Guys would be a good idea.
That's a good idea.
I have so a lot of the times when a game comes out and then let's say the game isn't even out, and they say, oh, and here is a preview of our DLC. And one of the big things that people complain about is, why not just put it in the fucking game? What are these lazy devs doing? They're just cutting content so that they could charge for it later or whatever. So tell us about that process. What is that balancing act? What is it like to do that? Because, I mean, for over 100 developers that we've interviewed, you just have to cut content. Eventually, you can't just keep adding because then the game will never come out. So eventually, you make a conscious decision where this is going to have to be looked at later down the line. What is the process like for you guys? Where do you say, okay, this can't be for launch because otherwise the game won't come out? Explain that to people who don't know the behind the scenes of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one because I think there's an idea that when you make a game, you make the mechanics, so then you make one level, and then you make the next level, and you just keep going, and then the game is done. Whereas in reality, it's a lot more messy. Like, a level will be finished, and then something else changes, and now that level doesn't work anymore. But it might be fully arted, and it might look finished, but it doesn't actually work when you play it. It completely falls apart. And I think that's what gets picked up sometimes by communities, is they go into the game files, and they find stuff, and they go, well, it's done. It's like, yeah, but you can't see what's going on behind the scenes because this level's got some weird thing that's more complex. So you essentially have to draw a line in the sand that's a level where everybody feels comfortable that you can get this game out the door and that it's going to perform well and that everything else can come later. And that those conversations can be really hard because there are levels that people feel very passionately about need to be in the game for launch, but we have to just say it's a great level, we love it, but it's too complicated. We're going to be bug fixing this level for weeks when we could spend all of that time and make the other 25 levels better. Which one would you rather pick? And so it becomes a kind of compromise there. It's a tricky one, and I see why people get frustrated. I think with Fall Guys, we know that all of our level content that we do post launch will be free as well.
That always
so
helps, yeah.
I mean, it's slightly easier for us than it is for some other companies. I mean, it seems like paid DLC for levels and stuff is almost a thing of the past at this point anyway. But it's a tricky process, but a couple of months before launch, you really do have to start reining back content creation because it becomes easier and easier to break things the more complex the game gets, and things that seem simple can have disastrous effects for the game. A classic phrase is, it's just a UI tweak. Like, I'm just making this smaller. I'm not touching anything else. And then it's just this domino effect of like, oh, because you committed that, someone else was working on this other big feature that used that reference, and suddenly a whole thing is conflicted. Like, it really snowballs very quickly. So you have to be pretty disciplined.
I was thinking more like, what if the slime was lava? What would that do?
What
to
if
the game?
All the Fall Guys now had bones?
Yeah,
that we can see.
What if we gave them a third leg?
Yeah, that's the slime level was called Floor is Lava for 6 months.
There you go.
And then we looked at it and we're like, it's not lava though, is it? And I was like, yeah, well, okay, we should probably rename it. But that whole level started with Floor is Lava's fun. That's like a game kids play that's explained in three words that, you know, how can we take that and make it into a game? And that one took a while, but eventually Slime Climb sort of blossomed out of it.
So when can we expect to play this masterpiece, Joe?
Soon, summer. I mean, the good thing right now is like if you go onto our Twitter and get involved in the closed beta playtests, we're starting to open the playtest up to more regions outside of the EU at the moment. So you can play the game really soon if you get on the closed beta list for sure. We're not allowed announcing the release date quite yet, but I'm sure there's something pretty soon as to what it's going to be.
All right, because summer is like already kind of here.
Just saying. Just warm.
Yeah, it's starting to get warm. Yeah, I agree.
All right, so where can everybody, before we get into our final segment here of rapid fire questions, where could everybody sign, like what is the Twitter? Where could everybody sign up for something like that? Where can they follow the game very closely?
Sure. So the best place to go is at Fall Guys Game on Twitter. From there, you can find links to our Discord is the best place to check things out. Once you found that, then you can get on the Discord. You can start talking about Fall Guys and get involved with the close beaters. And then we're coming out on PS4 and on PC summer this year.
Will PS4 and PC talk to each other? Is it going to be crossplay, or is it going to be on their own little ecosystems?
To begin with, we're not going to have crossplay, but we're definitely something we want to add as soon as possible, really. So we hear it a lot. People really want crossplay these days.
More importantly, if I buy the PS4 version, get the PS5 version with its 8K graphics and 120 FPS?
Oh, we haven't even started thinking about PS5 yet.
We're try monitor support. Done.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, that would be good. Try monitor support. One day. One day.
All right. So, Andy, did you compile any listener questions?
I did not.
All right, neither. I didn't see any come in. But that's okay. All right. So now we have a little segment that we like to do. It's fun. It's very off the cuff. Andy and I are just going to ask you a bunch of rapid fire questions, and you give the answer that comes to the top of your head. It's very silly. It's very simple. But we want to get to know you a little bit better. That's all. That's all this is about. All right. Andy,
I'm ready.
I'm going to start us off with one of our kickoff questions. One of the questions we love to ask. Yes, pineapple is on pizza, yes or no?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's delicious.
Yeah, it is.
What is something you can't do?
Oh, I can't do... I was trying to do some yoga in the house this morning. I can't do crow pose to save my life. Useless.
What is the worst thing you can do?
The worst thing I can do?
What is not like as a person. What is the most useless thing that you are good at?
Right.
Like something you're really good at that you're just like, why am I good at this?
I got really good at football keepy-ups over this quarantine play. I've been out in the garden for like 2 hours a day, and I'm really good at them.
What is this now to us Americans that football means something completely different?
So soccer, like juggling, like soccer juggling. So like when you're just tapping
like
the ball
knee
to
and
from
and your head and all that fun stuff. Yeah,
I got really good at that, and it's totally useless when you actually play.
Can you do some silly tricks?
Yeah, I can do around the world. I've been learning around the world recently.
That's awesome.
It's as good as it sounds.
If it's half as good as what the yo-yo around the world is, you got something impressive there, sir.
Yeah.
Now, that's a useful talent to have.
That's great. Yo-yo? Would you rather? Yo-yo around the world? Yeah, of course. Yeah. Batman uses yo-yos to tie up bad guys all the time.
Hey, so did Mikey in Turtles 2.
Mm-hmm.
It did around the world.
Yes,
or was
did.
It Donnie? I think it was Donnie. Anyway.
Yeah, it was Donnie.
Would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
Oh, yeah, flight, definitely.
Now, you were very, very quick on that, and there's got to be a reason. What's your reason for that?
Yeah, very fast.
I think that invisibility, ultimately, people who want to be invisible want to know what people are saying about them behind their backs. So that's truly what that means when people say, I want to be invisible, because that's all anybody's ever going to do with it. And I don't think anyone actually wants to know what people say behind their backs. It's only going to lead to pain, whereas flight is infinitely more fun.
What is the worst thing you've heard somebody talk about you behind your back? What is the worst thing you've heard somebody say behind your back?
I guess I've never heard it because it was behind my back, but
like you caught him red-handed. You're like, ha ha.
I think I've heard people say that I talk too loud. I have a very, my voice travels a lot. I've heard that in the
loud
in the
talker.
We're going to have to turn the volume down on this podcast probably.
If you could raid one person's closet, who would it be?
That's a good question. Oof. That's a good question. I think probably, I feel like Will Smith's just got great clothes. I reckon he's still got all of the stuff from like, I'm talking about like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air era Will Smith. I bet he's still got all of that stuff. I don't know what I'd do with it, but I'm also like,
what would you do with it? You'd put it on and
try it on, sniff it, you know, as one would do.
Yeah.
All right. If you could put on the costume of one superhero and have their powers for 24 hours, which superhero would you pick?
Oh, Spider-Man. I'm a Spider-Man fanboy for sure.
That's a great pick.
You wouldn't be
swinging
afraid?
Just looks so fun.
Like, I always think about that, and I'm like, if I was Spider-Man, I would be scared shitless to swing my web like that. Like, just free, like, ugh, just gives me the heebie-jeebies just thinking about it. But I guess his powers are that he's fearless, so, or without, you know, without those, I don't know, whatever.
You can sense when you smack into a building, I would imagine.
Yeah. Right?
Isn't that part of it?
You're not getting rid of the Steven part of the Spider-Man equation. That's the problem. Like, I don't become Peter
just
Parker.
Like the crippling anxiety.
I don't know how to make web. So, you know, maybe I don't have web unless it's Tobey Maguire Spider-Man universe, Sam Raimi, or whatever the hell his name is. Then I get that organic web. But, I mean, I'd really just be Spider-Man without the web at that point. I guess climbing would be cool.
Yeah. You still get that. You still get
spike. You'd just be a wrestler, I think, Steven.
I would be a wrestler for 24 straight hours.
You'd just
be
a
like,
wrestler.
Let's go.
You'd be like, fuck solving crime.
Yeah.
let all the world's Uncle Ben's die. I'm just going to be a wrestler full time.
Boonsaw's ready.
Joe, what are you most enchanted by?
Enchanted by? Alex Honnold. Do you know who Alex Honnold is?
I don't.
Please, oh my god. Expand. Okay. Have you seen Free Solo, the documentary about that climber?
No, we haven't seen this.
Oh my god. Basically,
it sounds like a quarantine watch.
Free Solo. My gosh. Basically, it's about this guy Alex Honnold who climbs up this like 3,000-foot El Capitan in Yosemite. He climbs up that with no ropes, and it is truly, I'm getting like sweaty palms just thinking about it.
Oh my god!
He does the entire thing with no ropes, and his everything about him. He's just so cool. I'm enchanted by Alex Honnold for sure.
Wow, what fascinating American game show would you want to be a participant on?
American game show, probably. Was it like American Gladiator or something?
Yeah.
Probably that. I've always wanted to go on one of those. That looks really good.
Which one of those games stood out for you? Like, what was the one that you really wanted to participate in? There was one I definitely didn't want, and that was the jousting, because that they would get the shit kicked out of them. But the gun one, where you had to like run and hide behind stuff and shoot with the Nerf guns.
Yeah.
Remember that game? That was a lot of fun. That looked like a lot of fun. I feel like that was
there was UK Gladiator, we had this one where you had to swing from rings and you had to like survive for a certain amount of time while another person chased you. And then they would grab you and they like wrap themselves around you and like pull you down off
of this
ring.
I think we had that one too, yeah.
That
yeah.
one just looked like anxiety inducing. I haven't figured out a way to get that into Fall Guys yet. Monkey bars is one of those things that's on the cutting room floor. I played around with that for a while, but it was too fiddly.
Oh, I got a visual. It looks silly.
Yeah.
Just these blobular jelly men trying to swing on the monkey bars. What is your kryptonite?
I really love Like I truly could eat hummus for every meal ever.
That's your weakness. It's like,
oh my god, so good.
Give me all the rights to Fall Guys. Here's some hummus.
Yeah,
here it is.
But like good, not like the rubbish stuff you get from the store. Like really good hummus. I've basically had it every single day for lunch since this whole quarantine thing began.
Do you make your own hummus?
I'm starting to sweat hummus at this point. No, I don't. I should learn. It seems like a lot of work.
Does it?
For something that's probably not going to be very good.
Isn't it just food processed chickpeas and some garlic and maybe a little salt and some oil and you're good to go?
It sounds like work.
I don't know. Maybe I'll give it a go. See how long this quarantine
chickpeas
is.
How expensive can chickpeas be these days?
No, yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know.
Hopefully there's not a shortage of them or something.
Slime climb, but it's hummus.
Yeah, hummus run. That's not bad.
So, which supervillain would you want to be your arch nemesis the least?
I always found Dr. Octopus quite terrifying.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. I think it's because that set of style of Spider-Man films I was really into.
The Sinister Six?
Yeah. Just something about those metal. Every time I see Spider-Man get pinned to the wall by one of those metal things, that just looks absolutely horrible. I don't want anything.
He's smart, and he has the brute strength behind it too.
Yeah, that's always the thing with me.
A deadly combination.
The smarter the villain is, the more terrifying he is for me. That's what, like Lex Luthor, who is incredibly unimposing as a physical person. Like I am sure that any iteration of that character, if it came to fisticuffs, I could probably beat him, even in my meekness that I am. But like the fact that I feel like he's calculating exactly how to murder me, like outside of that fight, and could do it probably instantly, or like drain my bank account with a text message. Like I just feel like that's like just brains scare me, I guess. And that's what makes the Joker so scary, because he's not just a dumb clown anarchist. Like he's so calculated and crazy, and like that's just scary. I was watching a documentary. I forget if it was on Netflix or what, but it was a Jeffrey Dahmer thing, and how he just was killing people for years and years and years, and then started eating them, and then like would drug them, and like it's like how does that brain function day to day? That is the type of villain I don't want anywhere. I want I would want the simplest, like give me Rhino any day of the week. Just a big dude that wants to crush things. Yes, I will fight you. Yes, absolutely. I will get CTE. I will have broken bones, but at least I know you're not going to like figure out a way to take over, you know, the city and you know, maybe steal my family or something.
And eat Aunt May.
Right. You're not going to cook.
Rhino
and eat
may
Aunt
do.
May.
You never know.
Yeah, I went to the last Spider-Man game. I went to a talk on how they made Spider-Man like play about halfway through the development of Fall Guys, and it blew my tiny mind. Like the tricks they pull in that game to make you feel good about what you're doing are insane. I would highly recommend anyone who's interested in it, go find it in the GDC vault. It's amazing.
How fun was that game for you, by the way? Spider-Man, as a huge Spider-Man fan, you want to be Spider-Man.
So yeah, so good. Controversially, I still think Spider-Man 2, the swinging's a little better in Spider-Man 2, and I'm not sure why. Like it's great in the new one, but there's something about 2 which
is that based on your memory, or did you go back and play it after playing?
I think it's from looking at footage. I think what it is that it feels like the PS4's got limitations on how fast they could let Spider-Man move, like laterally, because it has to load all the levels and stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So when I dive and then I catch myself right before I hit the ground, I want Spider-Man to be flung 200 blocks that way super quick, and it feels like they slow him down. Whereas on Spider-Man 2 on PlayStation 2, I guess it was. Mm-hmm. I remember having that speed. But I mean, other than that, it's an amazing, amazing game. I loved it.
Well, with the power of the PlayStation 5, and we know how quick that's going to load the city. Maybe it's going to be different.
Yeah, I mean they're definitely doing another one as well.
Tech demo of him swinging and everything loading already loaded in. And,
yeah,
and
that's insane.
And have you ever been to New York City?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really cool.
I mean, I worked in Manhattan and or worked in Manhattan, and seeing it nearly recreated, it seems like it was like scaled down maybe like by 20%. Like some blocks were just like mashed together and like whatever. But like seeing how much care went into that by like Madison Square Garden, which is where I worked like right down the block from there, and like seeing all the parks basically one for one and like all that stuff. It was really a trip, man. They did such a crazy job. I imagine that would be an IP that you would just absolutely die if you got to make a game for that.
That would be cool. That'd be really cool. Spider-Man Fall Guys crossover DLC. That would be like the dream.
Okay, let's discuss this. What would that look like?
I wish I hadn't said it now. I think you'd have to do like, I feel like you could do a good gauntlet where like you've got Dr. Octopus's claws coming down and you've got to like run through them. Like a good Spider-Man themed gauntlet would be really good, where you're just dashing towards the finish line.
So you could do six games, so, and they're all themed after the Sinister Six, right?
Yeah.
And you could do something like that. Like maybe, you know, Spider-Man's looking for a sidekick to take on the Sinister Six, and he wants to pick one of the Fall Guys because apparently Spider-Man has lost his mind, and he puts him through six games that are modeled after his arch villains, and there you go. You have DLC right there. Let's get Marvel on the phone.
Game would be Dodge the Symbiote. So it's like whoever is safe from one wins at the end of the match.
Yeah. Yeah, let's get Marvel on the phone. They're pretty relaxed with those IPs.
Totally. They're very, especially you might have to fight Sony also. It's Sony and Marvel because it's Spider-Man.
Yep.
So you got to worry about that too. I think it's fine. We'll be fine. Okay. Andy, why don't you hit us up with the final question? The final.
Well, I want to ask him one last would you rather question.
Okay.
It's
and then I'll hit him with
of
the
our
final
conversation.
Okay, fair enough.
Would you rather be trapped in a small room with 10,000 tarantulas for 10 minutes or eat 10 tarantulas for 10 minutes?
What?
The first one, definitely the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too scared of spiders, so I think I would.
I think, Joe, you'd hope that one would bite you and you get some sort of powers from it.
There's no tarantula, man.
I said 10,000 chances. Hey, you never know. Yeah, you'd be the first.
That's pretty, 1 in 10,000 chance. That's good odds. You look visibly distressed by that.
I'm trying to think, because like, how would you move in a room of 10,000 tarantulas? Like, every step you take would be a crunch.
Mm-hmm.
And death.
That's one less tarantula to worry about. But you might anger the others.
I know. They would send distress signals and it would be murder. They would kill you. They would easily kill you. They would easily overpower you and kill you and eat your flesh. There's 10,000 of them.
So you'd rather eat for 10 minutes straight tarantulas?
I mean, what you're saying? I can't even eat crabs and lobster. Like, I can't even get myself to do that. So I don't even know. Like, I would... Death. Death would be my option. I would say no.
Is there a knife? Can I slit my throat in this room?
Final question. Our ceremonial final question. Our traditional final question. Very important question. With everything going on, there are like five really important questions to ask in this life, but we're going to get rid of four of them. We're going to ask you only the most important one. And that is Andy or Steve?
Andy.
Mm-hmm. That was fast.
Yeah, that was a little too
that
fast.
That was really fast.
That
I
was
love
a little
it.
Too fast. I'm not going to lie. That I was a little, it. Little bit too quick. A little too quick on the draw there, Joe. A little too quick.
I'm not
going to say I'm insulted.
Instinct.
It was a little quick. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to bring us towards the end here. The Dual Screens podcast, like I said, posts each and every Thursday for your listening pleasure. Thank you so much. On this very same feed, we do have other shows. We have the Dual Screens Gamescast, in which we discuss video game news. We had a guest on the show this past Sunday. We stream the shows live on twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams, and then those post on Monday for your listening pleasure, and then on Tuesday on youtube.com/dualscreenstv. This show... Dual Screens Podcast posts the same day, audio and video on YouTube as well. We're also doing seasonal shows, which Andy, I got our guest for Dual Screens Versus.
I'm excited.
And it's either going to happen tonight or tomorrow night.
I'm excited.
Do you know who our guest is?
I don't. This is all news to me.
It is none other then your boy, then Snowbike Mike.
Holy
shit. He's coming on. The hype is real. The hype
this
is real.
It, boys.
It's going to be fantastic. Folks, if you're listening to this podcast on Apple Podcast, please do us a favor and leave us a review. It helps the show tremendously. It gets us in front of more eyeballs. It brings the visibility up. So if you could do that, that would be great. And if you want to support us on Patreon, you could do so by going to patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producer, Colton, the apprentice Nestler, who does not have a child yet and is asking us to give him our energy so that his wife can go into labor because they are dying for this baby to come out. So, Colton, we love you very much. Thank you for supporting us, and we cannot wait to meet your little one. We can't continue to grow without all of your support out there. So literally just $1 gets you a bonus episode every month. It gets you into our VIP Discord, which hopefully Joe will join us. I'll send you an invite if you want to join. No problem, Joe. If you don't want to, no problem. But yeah, we have indie dev guests. We have, we're in there. We're always chatting with each other, coming up with show ideas, topics. We have a mailbag section where you can ask questions to our guests and to the shows. It's really a lot of fun. We have community game nights and stuff like that. So it's a really great community, and it's exclusive to our Patreon supporters. And throughout all of this whole, probably to the end of the year, to be honest with you, anybody mm-hmm. that does join and then can't support us financially afterward, we're going to keep you in our Discord as a thank you. But we understand that, you know, with COVID-19 and all the stuff going on right now, that money might be tight. But once you're in for at least the end of the year. So because we want you to have a safe place to come, hang out, talk, you know, judgment free, and just be with a bunch of friends. So we do appreciate that. If you want to join our Facebook group, we're facebook.com/groups/DS podcast. You could also find our dual screens page at facebook.com/dualscreens.com, DOTCOM. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at NDS Podcast. I'm at BatChild27. Andy is at PantsGuy. And one more time, Joe, tell everybody where they could find everything about you, about the studio, about Fall Guys, about everything.
Cool, awesome. So if you follow at Fall Guys Game on Twitter, you can find our Discord on there. That's where we're posting all the news. That's how you can get access to our closed beta playtests that are ongoing. So come check us out. Wishlist us on Steam as well. That really helps. And we're coming out again, PS4 and PC, summer this year.
Very exciting. Very, 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 very exciting. And when do you anticipate having another round of signups, like outside of the EU and all that stuff for the beta?
As soon as possible, really. Like, it's we're going to be opening that up within a matter of days, I would imagine, to US and stuff like that.
Really that exciting. Would be awesome. Well, Joe, it was an absolute pleasure having you. We appreciate you taking your time out of your day and telling everybody about the game and just chatting with us about video games. You're a good one. We like you very much, and you're always welcome on the show. Maybe after the game does come out and you want to go around and promote it a little bit more, you're always welcome on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll get you guys in the next closed beta as well. Save some codes.
Awesome. Yeah, that'd be great.
Hell
that'd
yeah.
Be awesome. Are you allowed to stream the beta, or are you keeping that?
Not yet. Not yet, but okay. Soon.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you again. Thank you to our contributors. Our theme song, Retro Chatter, is by Bradley Parsons at Train Sound Studio. Thank you, Andrew Douglas, for our cartoon art. And thank you, Matt Murray, for our overlays and our logos. Thank you so much, everybody. That's going to do for the show. Andy, is there anything you want to tell the kids before we go?
Just stay safe and be awesome, people. That's really it.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, listeners. And as always, please be excellent to each other.